Welcome back to We Are History. We are
back, John.
We're back after our summer break. Very extended.
Oh, you've got a lovely tan.
I've been out and about, sitting in the garden, sitting on my boat. I've got a little narrow boat, as I may have mentioned. I've just had a week
show
on that.
Show off. He's got a boat and a garden.
I know.
I haven't got a boat or a garden.
Oh, just need to be born earlier. That is the trick. Be older.
Oh, yeah, damn it.
This is We Are History, back for our second season, as we'd say in America. Hi, it's season two.
Ooh, someone's been working in the States.
Yeah, it's season two. And we're the showrunners on this one. What are we doing today, Angela?
Well, John, today we are going way back, because you know I like to go way back.
Yes.
And we are looking at the emergence of Homo sapiens.
Homo sapiens.
Now, we've decided, haven't we, to go with sapiens, I think.
Yeah, we're not sure how you pronounce it, which is like one of the first things.
Sapiens,
I wonder how they said it. My idea of choosing this subject was to go a subject where Angela couldn't go back and do further, you know, background. Let's go back another 1,000,000,000 years.
I just like context, John. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, so today I'm going to be leading on this one, so apologies if I do a lot of the talking. But we are going way back in time. One thing I want to say at the outset, Angela, and I know this is shouldn't need saying, it is obvious to anyone who knows anything about history, but I'm going to say it anyway. Cavemen and dinosaurs were not on the Earth at the same time. You know, you had your picture books and you have your Fred Flintstone.
Rubbish. Rubbish. They definitely were. I've seen the Flintstones.
Raquel Welch in 1 million years BC with her fur wonder bra.
That is nothing if not evidence.
Imagine being a historical consultant on that film. I'm sorry, but there was no way that humans were around. So, yeah, can we just do the scene of the pterodactyl taking off her bra again? In America, there's a lot of people, fundamentalist Christians, basically, who insist that dinosaurs and humans were walking around at the same time.
Well, Americans are sensible people, John. if that's what they think.
But these are the creationists, the same people who refute Darwin and think he shouldn't be taught in schools, think it should only be taught as a theory, and that the Bible is the primary theory, primary evidence. There's actually a place in Texas in the 30s. They discovered evidence of human footprints alongside apparent dinosaur footprints. And look, they walked on the earth at the same time. God is love.
There can't possibly be any other explanation why both footprints would exist in the same place, can there?
So this is in Glen Rose, Texas. And so on this place, there's a creation evidence museum.
Well, if there's a museum, then I think I'm won over.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a museum to things that aren't true, do you, John?
I mean,
presumably that museum is full of evidence and artifacts, right?
What more do you need? So that's a very short podcast this week. It's been refuted.
I did have a quick look at their website, the Creation Evidence Museum.
Oh, yeah?
Doesn't seem to be a lot in the way of evidence.
You've got the Bible, though, so...
Well, yeah,
yes.
That is your primary source.
So let's go back to, I'm going back 6 million years, Angela.
That's further back than I've ever gone, John. I just want to point that out.
So that was when the last common mother of a chimp and a human, our last ancestor, had two daughters. One branched off to become hominids and the other branched off to become chimps. The mutations in that little family set the course for the history of the world. Can you imagine somewhere in Africa, this little family splitting in two?
One of them's a real black sheep.
Yeah, drinking PG tips. So this evolutionary path continues for millions of years. And then about 3.2 million years ago, Lucy was walking around in Ethiopia.
It's funny she had quite a modern name for someone so old.
I know. Yeah, well...
Yeah.
She was actually named after. Her skeleton was discovered while they were listening to the radio in 1974. And Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was playing. So they named this...
Oh, is that right?
Upright walking ape, Lucy. And this was a significant discovery because this ape walked upright. And that is a big deal.
Okay.
I know, you know...
So that's that link between the chimps and the...
Yeah, yeah. Because all the other apes, it's fair to say, use their hands for movement rather than Xbox. So it's quite a big deal that, you know, we walking upright was a breakthrough for hominids because it frees up the hands for throwing stones, making tools, whatever.
Right. But it had its drawbacks, doesn't it? I mean, for a start, that we're all plagued with back problems is sort of said to be linked to the fact that we weren't really designed to walk upright.
No Pilates back then, Angela.
No Pilates 3.2 million years ago. Probably yoga, though. That seems pretty old.
And it also brings problems for the birth of babies because, you know, if you're on all fours and you give birth, your pelvis is a certain shape. But as you start to stand upright, it makes the gap in the pelvis difficult, harder to give birth. And so the baby, especially with our growing brains. Now, this is woman stuff. You should probably talk about this.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this stuff. It's really, so we give birth when way before our babies are really ready, right? Yeah. We give birth a lot earlier than most mammals in that, you know, you see a horse give birth and the foal's up and trotting off and doing its own thing pretty immediately. But our babies are completely helpless when they're first born.
The development continues outside the womb, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. They keep cooking. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. They can't walk for a year. They can't feed themselves for a few years. If they're buying a flat, forget it.
But what I find really fascinating, so this is one of the reasons why, evolutionarily speaking, babies are cute. I've been writing about this in my book, John.
You're writing a book, Angela.
Be out in the spring.
Oh, look, make an excellent present, wouldn't it, a book?
Wouldn't it, Jazz? Well, it's an audio book, so it's not a great present because you can't really unwrap it. But, you know. Yeah. The thought that counts. So babies are cute, I think we'll agree, generally speaking. And the reason they're cute is something called baby schema, is because they're so needy, human babies, they've had to make them so that they're really appealing to their parents. So their parents don't just go and cast them off to the woods, you know.
Right, okay.
So the big eyes and the big features and the sort of eyelashes and everything that's cute about a baby is designed so that we care and nurture them.
Designed by God.
And same, obviously. Always been to the museum again. But it's the same with dogs, though. Dogs are also said to have evolved that. So going back to early humans, when wolves would come to human settlements and they would get fed, and they evolved to look cute to humans so that humans would feed them and take care of them.
Well, how interesting.
So that's why dogs are so cute to us. And
especially cockapoos.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Especially cockapoo, especially my cockapoo.
So bipedal gait is called out. But the thing about bipedal gait, it preceded the enlarged brain, like anyone cares.
Right.
So listen, listeners, take this in. Bipedal gait preceded enlarged brain. They're switching off of their millions, Angela.
So what does that mean? That means that we were walking on 2 feet before our brains got bigger.
Yeah. So, and Lucy wasn't a human, of course. She was actually, you know, she was 3 foot 7 tall, but she was sort of one of the missing links between apes and humans. So about 2.5 million years ago, the genus Homo evolved in Africa. So that's not us. That's not Homo sapiens. It's Homo erectus.
Oh, snigger, snigger at the back of the class.
They were named to make it hard for female teachers to keep order in all boys' schools. Miss, what they called again? Homo erectus. Ha ha ha. It's her again, miss. So erectus because they walked upright, Angela.
Right.
So they are a separate species to sapiens.
So we've still not got to us yet, have we?
No. Homo erectus. That's not till half time.
yeah.
So and this isn't a species from which we evolved. This is a separate species of human. So just as there are many sorts of finches, goldfinch, bullfinch, you know, greenfinch. There were many sorts of humans. We are just one sort, and we come quite recent. We're quite recent, but we are not. It's not a chain of one evolving to the other.
One doesn't turn into the other.
It's not like that famous drawing of the sort of ape in the upright ape and the bloke with the spear.
The ascent of man.
And the, yes, right.
Yeah.
And then one at the front going, "Turn back, turn back." They elect Donald Trump. this is an important thing to say that Homo erectus is just one type of human. Sapiens is another type of human. It's not one turning into another. So, but these humans did also have stone tools, for example, of which many survive.
Right.
Primitive flint axes, spearheads, Betamax videos, those sort of things.
So are humans we're not the only animals to use tools?
No. Can you think of any other example there in the back of the class?
birds using stones to smash open shells. I've just read that on your notes.
Very good, Angela.
No, but yes, of course they do. And, of course they do.
And chimps will put a stick inside an ant's nest and then lick off all the ants. And they learn, you know, they learn this off each other. There's a, I don't know if you're a fan, like it's a very Boysy thing to be into, but 2001 Space Odyssey, that opening 15 minutes.
Here, John, I want to go, how dare you say it's Boysy? How dare you say that?
I know, but to be
in 2020. But I can't say that because I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, I've seen it about 10 times. But that sort of, so the first, it's an amazing Kubrick film. If only, if you only do one thing, Google the cut, the famous cut in 2001 Space Odyssey. So it's for about the first 20 minutes of the film, it's all these apes beating their chest and screaming. And one of them picks up this big shin bone and feels it in his hand. Right. And then he just smashes another ape over the head with it. He's discovered a tool. He uses it as a weapon and he's king of the world.
Right.
And he throws it up into the air. And it turns into, in this cut, it turns into a space station. And that's sort of like the journey that mankind has made from discovering that first tool. But the point Kubrick is making is that the first thing he did was smash another ape's head.
Smash
with
it, yeah.
Which I'm not sure we would agree with now. I don't know whether mankind first used a tool as a weapon or first used it to gather food. Mm. Who knows? Maybe they, someone, another ape boulder pine cone at him, and that's how cricket got started. That's my theory.
That's a much nicer theory. Let's go with that one, that we're all inherently violent, awful creatures.
Yeah. But anyway, it's 2 million years ago that humans started to spread from Africa to Eurasia, come out of Africa into the Arabian Peninsula and then out of into Europe, in the Middle East.
And but it's still not
still
us,
not
is
us.
It, John?
It's still
these
not
humans?
Sapiens,
still not us.
Other ones. So they've got tools. They've got.
You've got Erectus and
a whole load of them.
The other
there's
ones.
A whole load of them.
There's quite a lot, aren't there? Yeah.
I've got. I've written them down here somewhere. So we've got Homo habilis, meaning you know has a house. Homo rudolfensis. Homo heidelbergis, named after his lager that they drank. Homo denisova. So loads of other ones. They're spreading all the way to China. So the you know in China they found Peking man, this skeleton.
No, not Peking Tom, Peking man.
No, Peking man found in Peking. They found their remains all the way from the Iberian Peninsula to Java. So they spread right out these other species before we came along.
Wow.
And then they discovered fire. 300,000 years ago, they reckon they start to use fire regularly.
That's relatively recently then, isn't it? If you're, you know.
Yeah.
Humans are going back 6 million years.
Well, that's, well
but only
apes.
In the last 300, yeah. well, apes, sorry, yeah. Yeah. 2 million years. And then in the last 300,000 years, they've used
fire. Yeah.
Fire. Are you doing, like when you discover fire, how do you, this is one of those questions, isn't it? It's like saying, how do people discover drinking milk but or making cheese or whatever? But
I suppose lightning strikes a tree quite, and there's a fire, there's natural fire occurring. And then they discover that the animals that got burnt in the forest fire are easier to
tasted
eat.
Tasted quite nice.
Yeah, they thought, oh,
charcoal.
Roasted venison, yum. Mm. So I kind of see how that might have...
I suppose, yeah, it does make sense.
But the fire was a big breakthrough because it takes loads and loads of energy to digest food. And a chimp will spend hours and hours digesting any meat they eat. But when we cook meat or any other food, it's much easier to digest. And it frees up calories. For the human brain. So our human brain takes 25% of our body's energy when our body is at rest, and other apes only 8% of their energy goes into their brain. So using less energy digesting your food freed up calories for thinking. You never get an ape doing
I'm a bit upset to find that the human brain takes 25% of our body's energy when at rest, and I get, well, I should be thin then because I think a lot. It's quite upsetting.
So our brains got bigger because we didn't have to use all our energy on digesting, and cooking also meant we could, you know, clear whole forests and set fire to forests, go through eating all the charcoaled badgers that have been left behind or whatever.
So basically they set fire to grassland and then go and eat
what was in there. This is a theory. We don't know about this.
This is barbecuing on a massive scale.
There's nowhere uncommon where it says no barbecues. You know, this is why. So, and the Neanderthals, they emerged in Europe and the Middle East about 500,000 years ago. They had fire. They had a bigger brain than us, in fact, bigger brain than humans, and they were bigger than us. Other interesting things about Neanderthals is that they've discovered that Neanderthals with serious injuries continued to live on after they endured that break or whatever, which suggests family groups caring for you know, members of the tribe or whatever who were of no use or were a burden. So
that people weren't just discarded, they were nursed.
So you get the sense of caring and community, I suppose, from that. The Neanderthals didn't, however, engage in trade. So they were Brexit voters. So there's no sense of...
Well, you know, I've been to a Wetherspoons and...
so it speaks for itself. No, but
they say they're not sure whether they interbred the Neanderthals and the Homo sapiens, but I think anyone who's been to a Wetherspoons would be able to answer that question.
Yeah, we've all woken up next...
Actually, I think that's a bit mean to the Neanderthals.
We've all woken up next to a Neanderthal. We've all been to those student parties to go, what did I do last night? Neanderthals, you know, made tools, but no sense that they were swapping tools around different parts of Eurasia. At this point, about 200,000 years ago, we've got all these different sorts of hominids walking around, Homo erectus, you know, Homo neanderthalis, when 200,000 years ago in Africa, in East Africa, a new sort of human evolves, Homo sapiens. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun.
Evolved in somewhere like Kenya or Ethiopia or the Rift Valley or whatever. Along comes us, evolved on a Thursday.
It was definitely a Thursday.
We'll take a break there. You're going to want to know what happens to Homo sapiens and whether they make it. So we get off. We have a short interval while man make fire and woman cook meat.
Vegan woman cook meat? Don't think so.
All right, catch you after the break.
See you in a bit.
Does what's going on in the American election scare and bemuse you in equal measure?
Want to know what Biden and Trump are up to without tearing your hair out?
Then you need to listen to American Friction, the brand new podcast about the countdown to the big vote in November from the makers of Oh God, What Now?, The Bunker and Paper Cuts.
Every Friday, we'll speak to leading experts and blockbuster commentators from the United States to explain the latest news and the big issues behind the vote.
That's American Friction with me, Jacob Jarvis.
Me, Chris Jones.
And me, Nikki McCann Ramirez.
Out every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to We Are History. We're talking about Homo sapiens, the emergence of humans. And
yes.
I've moved room, Angela. My
You've moved through. Your Wi-Fi was shocking in the first half, John.
This is not a problem that the early sapiens ever had. But recording their podcast with difficult Wi-Fi during a pandemic, it's a challenge.
In a lot of ways, John, we have it a lot harder than the original Homo sapiens.
They never thought about this. So it was 100,000 years ago. All these species of humans were all existing at the same time. All, you know, as I said before.
But crucially, dinosaurs
are not around, despite what you saw, you know, despite what the Christians read in the gospel, according to Fred Flintstone. different species of human walking around. Only one of which survives today, and that is a very rare situation in the history of life on Earth, or the history of humankind, is that there'd be only one finch, as I said, or only one species of
dog or whatever. Yeah.
Sapiens means wise, sapiens.
I mean, that's debatable, isn't it? But depends on who you're comparing it to.
Yeah. Although these are all different species, as we said before the break, there is DNA evidence that we did interbreed a little bit with the Neanderthals. We had a lot to drink.
Now, this is, I always get this mixed up, and I might get it wrong here because I haven't got it in my notes. But so it's your different species can interbreed.
Well, technically not.
It's different.
Technically not. So,
oh, right. So species can't, but. Yeah.
So a donkey and a horse can breed to make a mule, but mules can't have babies.
Are infertile.
So that makes them separate species. Whereas a goldfinch won't breed with a greenfinch. But we did have a little bit of nookie with this rather.
Right.
He looked handsome and big, this big Neanderthal man, and Derek had just left. It was a difficult time. He was listening. you know. So, yeah, so I suppose...
Oh, she was vulnerable, John. She was vulnerable.
But it does make us... And they do think that maybe Chinese and Korean sapiens interbred with Erectus. So,
right.
So it does make us, you know, you don't, probably don't want to get too deep into this, but it does make us slightly different species, you know, of humans around the world. So there's one for your racists.
Oh dear.
But so the question then is, why are we the only ones to survive? Why did the other hominids die out? And this.
So your Erectus, your Habilis, your Rudolphensis, your Heidelbergis.
Heidelbergis. Why did Heidelbergis not make it and sapiens did? So did we replace them violently? Did we interbreed with them? Or did we make their habitat, you know, did we get all the food and all that? And did we sort of make them starve their way out?
Yeah.
So it seems that even though Neanderthals were bigger and stronger than us, had bigger brains than us, they didn't have that cooperating thing that we developed. So as I said, there was no trade, and it suggests that we learned to work as teams in a way that other humans didn't. I mean,
so they stuck to their sort of community, their small communities, whereas I suppose we learned to trade and to share skills or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
so, I mean, early on, you know, humans were in the middle of the food chain, mostly a gatherer. So that image of us all hunting a mammoth, that's very, very rare. Most of the time we'd be eating insects and eating, grubbing for roots. They think that feeding on bone marrow might have been our niche thing. So when the big, scary lions and jackals had sort of brought down a mammoth, we'd wait for them all to finish, and then we'd go along and break.
Go in and pick out the
yummy bit in the middle, Angela.
Oh, lovely. Have some of that.
A bit of my bone marrow.
We were basically nature's tramps, weren't we? Just coming and picking through the rubbish at the end of the day, see what's left, go through the bins.
Shouting at passers-by.
But look what they've left. That's good, that. We'll have
that. Waste that. That's,
what a
don't
waste.
Don't waste that marrow. You can make a nice stock with that. So I must have told you, I think I've even said this on the podcast before, but when my mum had her new hip, she said to the doctor, can I have the bone for my dog, the old hip bone? It's like, no, madam. She was such a waste. She threw the bone away. Could have made a lovely stock with that. Could have given it to the dog. Honestly.
Well, one thing you don't want to do is give your dog a taste for your bones.
No, I would have thought that.
I wouldn't have thought.
Fudge the golden retriever would have been very confused, I think. So that's what we're hardwired to do, which is walk around and walk around all for hours and hours a day, eating, you know, grubs and roots and plants. And so, you know, we belong in the open air, walk around. That's why there are massive viewing figures for Countryfile, basically, because we're going, that's where I should be. It should be out there walking on the downs.
Scrubbing around in the ground.
Yeah. So amazing. Well, I went to Australia last year, and I went out to Uluru in the middle, you know, formerly Ayers Rock. And we got a talk from an Aboriginal guide, and he described his grandfather going out and hunting a kangaroo. And so the more this guy talked, I realised that his grandfather had been a hunter-gatherer in the Stone Age, effectively. He had, Uluru, Central Australia, was so many days travel from sort of Melbourne or Sydney that he was completely isolated. Yeah. They still lived the same basic life that was being lived, you know, thousands of years ago before the rest of the world turned up. He described how the grandfather went out, spent days tracking this kangaroo, killed it with a boomerang or whatever, cut open his stomach to drink the liquid, the brine from the stomach, then tucked the limbs inside the stomach, carried this kangaroo all the way back to the camp, which was a day's walk in the hot sun, collapsed in exhaustion while they all carved up the kangaroo, cooked it, and saved a bit for him. And that was in the past hundred years. That basic hunter-gatherer Stone Age lifestyle was still continuing in one part of the world, which I thought was quite amazing, really.
That's incredible.
That's what humans did for thousands of years ago. Then around 70,000 years ago, now I'm getting into that book, the Yuval Noah Harari one, Sapiens. He puts forward this great theory about the invention of fiction. And that is why humans were able to work in groups bigger than 150. So if you're in a school or in a factory, you can just about make it work, you know, with trust of those people and wanting the respect of the people you work with. When you get bigger and you've got 1,000 people working together, you can't just say, well, I'm doing this because Derek's a good bloke and I depend on him. You've got to start believing in something bigger. You've got to believe in the gods or my tribe versus their tribe, or a bigger concept than just us.
So his theory is, isn't it, that these sort of, well, he calls them fictions, these sort of constructs, I suppose, of society that aren't real are put in place, that aren't, you know, tangible, real things. They're things that that exist.
Well, we've invented countries, we've invented money, we've invented religions, nationalities. These are all constructs. And they've been very useful to motivate us or sometimes to divide us. But this is what is unique among humans and, among Homo sapiens, I should say, to differentiate us from the Neanderthals or Homo erectus. We had this concept of loyalty or concept of religion, which meant that cooperation could happen across huge numbers of humans. And that was the beginning of the behavioral modernity, is what I read in another book. Humans, that's really the beginning of history, really, because everything up to this point is DNA, hardwired to do it. It's anthropology. But after that, humans start making choices and coming up with notions and fictions. And that's when history starts, I think. You start to have the burial of the dead, art, probably folk music, Angela.
But isn't there is evidence that art and music existed before, right? In there's some evidence that Neanderthal humans created jewellery and art and
I don't know if Neanderthals, I'm not sure if we do know that.
I was reading about it. There is evidence of some art that dates to that period where Homo sapiens weren't there.
Okay.
And also, I read something about that. Well, there's some controversy about it, but a bone flute that they've attributed to Neanderthals, but they're not entirely sure. There's no consensus that that's what it is.
But I hate bone flute. I hate the bone flute. Yes. I never give buskers. When buskers are doing bone flute, I never give them anything.
I remember learning this from my linguistics days, that Neanderthals, the way that their palate and vocal tract is meant that they wouldn't be able to make the sounds that we're able to make. So there
was going to be grunts. I reckon it was grunts.
Yeah. Basically. So I'm not sure how, you know, I don't think they were doing concertos and.
But as you say, they were sophisticated.
Yeah.
The myth is the other thing that Yuval Noah Harari talks about, the invention of myth. Mm. And so, you know, believing that the sun was conscious or that, you know, that there were gods, you know, that were guiding us or controlling us.
I know in his book, I didn't finish it, John. I'll be honest, I didn't. I found it frustrating. I think one of the things, I know a lot of his theories have been sort of argued with since he wrote it, but I think the sort of the whole idea of the myths and the fictions makes a lot of sense. And they are fictions, yes, like money's a fiction. But I don't, it's not like we've all bought into this collective thing without, we have no choice but buy into it, because if not, we'd die, right?
Sure.
So it's, while it sort of is a fiction, but it isn't really, is it? Because the fact is, if I don't have money, I would starve to death, because operating in that system.
Yeah, but, you know, water, rocks, cows, they are tangible. The concept of France, you know, that's just made up.
I get that, but I think it's the sort of the way he writes, he makes it sound like we've all been hoodwinked into this big kind of
consciously made that choice,
but we have no choice, really, do we? Otherwise we wouldn't. It's survival in the system we're in, I suppose.
Hello, I'm Dorian Linsky.
And I'm Ian Dunn.
We are the hosts of Origin Story, the podcast that unpacks the history behind the ideas, the people and the events that shape political discourse today.
And we are back for season 5.
We're kicking off with a two-parter on George Orwell, the man, the work, the ideas. We follow him from Burma to Spain, through Second World War London, to the writing of his masterpieces Animal Farm and 1984, and how their legacy is used and misused today.
That's Origin Story Season 5, coming now from anywhere you get your podcasts.
So you're saying you're forced to believe in it. So I've got this money. I think you should invest this money with me. And, first thing I want to say is it's not a pyramid scheme. That's the first thing I'm going to say.
I'm in, John. You've got a trustworthy face. I've always said it.
So did we go around killing the Neanderthals, or did humans
survive because they were so violent. Because you do look up, you know, other anthropologists and sociologists have looked at modern human capabilities of genocide and war.
I know I always bang on about Newfoundland, but it's quite an interesting place in that it's one of the few places on Earth where a complete genocide took place.
That's right.
With the Biothics. But the genocide wasn't, I think it was violent in part over land and territory and things like that. But part of it was also it was that as European settlers came in and took over or sort of moved into villages, the native Aboriginal people were moved inland where there wasn't a food supply and there wasn't fishing.
I think this might be what happened with the Neanderthals.
Yeah.
That they were not able to cope with the Ice Age and that they were, the humans were much more adaptive and much, as we've seen now, that humans can live from Alaska to the Sahara. So that might be why we survived. But the other book you're talking about by Rutger Bregman, The Humankind, he talks about empathy and cooperation between humans.
Yeah.
And that the fact that we were able to work in teams and look out for one another and empathize with a total stranger, you know, and help people we'd never met before, it might be what's something that's hardwired into us. That's what's made us.
One of the things the ultimate species. I loved in that book was the real life Lord of the Flies story that he told.
Yes.
You know, that so obviously if you read Lord of the Flies, it shows very quickly how humans descend into chaos and violence and just being horrific.
I was Jack. I play Jack in the school play.
Did you? Did you?
The baddie. Yeah.
But when it did happen, it was Samoa was it or somewhere off?
Yeah, it was like Samoa. Yeah, it was the sort of Pacific Islands.
It was a Pacific Island somewhere, and these boys were shipwrecked, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah, and
18 months or something crazy a really long time, and they cooperated.
They just
and
didn't.
Survived.
They didn't turn into savages. Yeah. They looked out for each other, and they looked after each other, and then they got back to wherever it was, and were arrested for nicking the boat.
That's right. That's right. Because they were all at school together, weren't they? And they'd stolen a boat, or they'd gone off on a boat.
It was a high-class bunk-off, is what I was saying. It was like, shall we go into town and push trolleys down the multi-story car park? Theirs was the whole other level.
I don't think they intended to be shipwrecked for 18 months, but sure.
No, it was classy.
Yeah.
So humans started to replace or interbreed with all the other humans, the other species of human, spreading right out, developing boats. So 45,000 years ago, Homo sapiens settled Australia, which is an incredible achievement. If you think about going down that Indonesian archipelago and
just
landing
getting
on Australia.
There, from
and that this is the first mass extinction. So when the humans arrived in Australia, we basically killed all the megafauna there. There were huge, huge marsupials, you know, much bigger than anything that exists today,
and presumably with predators, really.
No natural predators at that point.
Yeah.
16,000 years ago, humans crossed the Bering Straits into the Americas. Evolution starts to go backwards in some states, I think. Do you know when humans turned up in New Zealand, Angela?
No. Was it much more recently?
It was 800 years ago.
No way.
Amazing. Yeah, it was during the Black Death. It was around then. That was when the Maoris first got to... They came from the other side. They came across the Polynesian route. So they came sort of the Easter Island, Fiji, Polynesian. And they didn't turn up to the 1350, they reckon. Which I thought was amazing when I
read New Zealand's a relatively new... I mean, I remember being there a few years ago and being told how... Basically, there's the... just off Auckland, there's the big volcanic island. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
But how the Maoris basically had not long arrived and they watched it sort of
erupting
or just sort of form this volcano like, as I said to someone there, like, we've got pubs older than their volcanoes.
That's right. Well, a lot older than Maori culture.
Well, So
the Tower of London was built before the Maoris arrived in New Zealand, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is.
But this showed that humans were sort of still spreading around as you know, as we developed. So very recently, it's actually incredibly recently that the last human species, non-sapiens species, died out, which was 13,000 years ago.
Right.
Which is the same time that we were farming and, you know, developing cultures in the Middle East. And this is a species called Homo floresiensis.
Right.
Now, this was only discovered about 15 years ago. There was a thing, I don't know if you remember the stuff in the paper about the Hobbit. There was the Hobbit, Hobbit human discovered, and it's in the island of Flores in Indonesia. 3 foot high, they were. And they reckoned when they were finally contacted by other humans, they were patronised to death. they would turn up and go, "Hello, son, is your mum and dad around? I'm 37. And they had slightly flatter foreheads, and that's from all the humans patting them on the head.
That's a good lad.
But they hunted mammoths, but their mammoths were dwarf as well, because everything on this island.
Well, that's cheating.
Everything had evolved to be smaller, because if you have a smaller food supply, then you're evolution smaller, favors those with a lower appetite, and so everything got smaller and smaller on Flores.
Wow.
And then finally, the bloody Homo sapiens turn up, and they're done. Here's a really interesting thing about this, is that in local folklore to this day, there was tales of a race of tiny men that lived off on the island.
Oh.
So down 13,000 years, folklore had survived with tales of these men. And then we found archaeological evidence of it. So that's pretty cool, isn't it?
That is really cool.
Yeah, that was all. I did a piece about it in The Guardian many years ago, but I was quite excited to read about that again because I've forgotten all about it. So the bottom line is that it's a very, very tiny period of history that Homo sapiens have been the only species of human kicking around. If life on Earth was a 24-hour clock, humans appeared about 1 minute to midnight. The Industrial Revolution is 1 second to midnight.
Wow.
Any way you look at it, it's all nearly over.
It's very close to midnight.
The future, they think that the apes will rise up and take over, and Charlton Heston will see the Statue of Liberty on the beach and he'll sink to his knees in the waves and go, "You maniacs, you blew it up. God damn you all to hell." That is what scientists think is going to be the future.
I think that sounds like a more promising future than the one that where we all die in a nuclear war because Trump gets upset by something Iran says.
Well, I think that's what leaves the Statue of Liberty half burnt on the beach for Charlton Heston to discover. So there we have it. That's the
whole of human
sapiens.
History. That's basically our podcast done then, isn't it?
Oh, no. We've got first one of the series. We just realised we've done it all.
Done human history now. What next?
Oh, no. Disaster. That was a big tactical mistake by us.
Oh, I think we should say a little thank you to everyone that's tweeted us and stuff while we've been off
air. We've had some lovely messages of we miss you. And...
Yeah, really nice. And not all from my mum, which is even better. But I think, and we've had lots of really good suggestions for podcast episodes as well. So we are keeping a list and we will eventually.
We're going to do one that someone suggested because someone suggested Watergate and we're going to do that next week.
We are going to do that next week. Absolutely.
So we'll give you a name check. I'll look it up who it was on Twitter.
Brilliant.
But thank you, Spike, our producer. Thank you, Angela, for listening to me go on about sapiens and cavemen and Fred Flintstone.
Thank you. I'm going to book myself a little holiday to Texas. So I hear there's a good museum.
Yeah, amazing. Mm. Yeah, well, God has guided you. That's all from We Are History this week. We'll be back with something a little more up to date next week. But in the meantime, keep reviewing.
Do give us tweeting. 5 stars on iTunes.
5 stars on Uber.
On Uber.
Yeah.
But it does help get us up the old rankings the old and more. Tweet about it and tell your friends or whatever. Because, we want as many people to listen as want to.
All right. That's it. Lovely. See you next time on We Are History. Let the music play out.
Bye.